We hope you enjoy the following presentation of The Value of Astrology in the Consciousness Movement, Part 1 by Dane Rudyar. This recording is 45 minutes long. This audio is brought to you by RITA, the Rudyar Institute for Transpersonal Activity, a nonprofit public benefit corporation dedicated to disseminating the work and essential message of Dane Rudyar. All material is copyrighted by Leila Rudyar Hill. If you'd like to learn more about RITA or make a donation towards supporting the ongoing legacy of Dane Rudyar, visit www.rudyarinstitute.org. For the complete selection of free downloads of audio presentations by Dane Rudyar, visit www.rudyaraudioarchives.com. And now, Dane Rudyar.
Friends, I am happy to be here with you again, and I hope that you can go with me in my thinking and try to free your mind of old ideas so as to be receptive to somewhat new ones. What I would like to start with is to stress a fact which I have often mentioned, but which I think always bear repeating, and that is that there is not only one astrology. And by that, I do not mean merely that there is, say, mundane astrology or this kind or that other kind of thing as we are using different schools at the present time, but that every culture, every society, every civilization has its own astrology, just as it has its own arts, expressions, and also its own science. We have a tendency to believe that there is only one science, which is our modern science, and there is only one astrology, which we have inherited somehow from Egypt or Chaldea through Ptolemy in Alexandria. But actually, every culture has a different kind of astrology, which fits the need of the particular people of that culture, the particular condition in which that culture is operating at the time. Now, this, I think, is a very important thing, because what I am trying to tell you about today is the value of astrology in relation to the consciousness movement. And I do not know how much some of you may know or understand about that phrase, consciousness movement, which is, of course, very well known, particularly in California and in many other places, particularly by young people. But I am going to tell a little more about it in order to localize, as it were, the situation which we are dealing with in astrology, and particularly which I have been dealing with in astrology for the last 15, 20 years, and in a certain sense for 40 or 50 years. There is still very little, I believe, that we truly understand about what happened in the 60s in America and, in a sense, all over the Western world, even in Japan. And that is the first thing that I want to talk a little about, and to see and to show you how astrology can respond to the need of what was started at that time, new needs in a sense, and therefore a new approach to astrology altogether. It doesn't mean that you are not using the same factors, the planets, the sign, the houses, and so on, but that your approach to the whole situation, and particularly your answer to what that famous question which nobody usually asks, what astrology is for, can be answered in various ways. think the thing which in a way began that period in the 60s was the conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn and the 26th degree of Capricorn in February 1961. Of course, as you know, that was the beginning of the Kennedy administration, which in a sense brought to the White House and therefore to the symbol of the unity of America, of the United States, a new sense of use. It was an early symbol of the rise of youth, and perhaps in a certain sense later on of the relative inability of the new factors to alter in any way or in any serious way the basic pattern of our managerial society, which of course led to the death of Kennedy, the assassination of Kennedy. Now, in February 5th, 1962, there was a solar eclipse at the 16th degree or 17th degree of Aquarius. And at that time, you probably remember, perhaps some of you at least, there were seven planets in Aquarius. All the planets from the Sun to Saturn were in Aquarius, and it was squared by Neptune and 15 degree of Scorpio, with Uranus in Leo and Pluto in Virgo. Now that led immediately, or not immediately, but very soon after, to the conjunction of Uranus and Pluto, which lasted between October 65 to June 30, 1966. Three times they were conjunct. And that opposition, that conjunction, marked in a way, or brought to a focal point, determination, much of what now has been called the consciousness movement, or at that time was also called counterculture. Now, this was 12 years ago, and the 12-year cycle is the cycle of Jupiter, which is the symbol of social processes, mostly. And therefore, it is rather significant that we should think about it, because in some way there is a sort of recurrence of what are we going to do, what is the possibility of doing with some of the things that were started at that time and which in many ways didn't lead to as much as many people had hoped it would. Now, as you realize probably, during the beginning of the 60s was the beginning of the psychedelic process where after Aldous Huxley wrote his books on the door of perception, Leary and others advertised and publicized LSD, and the movement which became publicized by the media as the hippie movement started and had a very brief period of flowering, the summer of love of 1967 at Ashbury in San Francisco. And it was then, you see, that the media began to speak quite extensively about a revolution in consciousness and began to give the impression that there was a possibility to move on, as it were, to a new type of living, which was not a political revolution in America or in much of the Western world, the so-called free world, but a revolution in consciousness. And the term consciousness, which was very little used until then, really, began suddenly to appear everywhere. The word holistic also began to be used very largely and widely, and it was a word which was actually founded or discovered or invented by a great statesman from South Africa, General Smuts, who was also a philosopher and wrote a very fascinating book, Holism and Evolution, in the 20s. Interestingly enough, everybody is speaking about holistic, and nobody ever speaks about General Smuts, who was the one who used the term for the first time. But that is not unusual, because I had the same experience myself. I started in 1968 what I call the Humanistic Astrology, International Committee for Humanistic Astrology. And since that time, that word humanistic in relation to astrology has been very widely used, and very often not used at all in the way in which I had meant it, or at least with the implication which I gave to it. Now, as you know, there had been a great deal already of development of astrology since around 1920 or so, and my book, The Astrology of Personality, was written in 34, 35, 36, and published then in 1936. But the thing that you may not realize is that in those days, in the 20s particularly, astrology was very little known. There was no magazine writing about it, and if you gave lectures on astrology, you had maybe 20-30 people, it would have been absolutely impossible to conceive such kind of an audience for an astrological lecture. If you had, as I said, 50 people, that was a tremendous success, and they usually went once to see what strange person could talk about astrology and then never return to the other lectures afterwards. It was really in the 60s, you see, that astrology became very widely known and became with large attendance, because it was then that the young people became interested immensely to it. But the thing that is not perhaps entirely realized is that the very interest of the young people offered the possibility of an entirely different approach to astrology, because what most of, well, a large amount, number of those young people wanted of astrology at the time was not the kind of things that the old-time astrologer were giving them, but in something quite different, and something which some astrologers gave them to some extent, but most of them still kept not giving them. One thing that I read recently, which may interest some of you, in the magazine, I'm not sure now which magazine it was, maybe it was one called Parabola, there was a very interesting article about the interesting relationship between a youth movement that occurred in Germany after the First World War, when there was a tremendous inflation and chaos in Germany after the defeat following the First World War. And they traveled widely all through Europe, through Germany. They had hostelry, they had a great sense of freedom, and so on and so forth. And if you read some of the things that were written about them at the time, you see how quite interestingly the two movements have certain parallel. And it is a rather ominous kind of realization to have, because, of course, that movement of the youth was very unfortunately taught by Hitler, and much of them, I don't say all of them, but a great many of them became involved and fascinated by the Nazi youth movement. Now, the interesting thing there is that lately there apparently has been another kind of movement growing slowly in Europe, even in France, which was very much impervious to it, and in Germany, of course, and perhaps England and all that, which tries to also get away from some of the traditional, classical, medieval or Renaissance type of astrology, which was absolutely dominating most of Europe, except perhaps some fragment of Germany, and a eager desire to reach towards something which would be more in touch with their basic desire. And that is, in a certain sense, the reason why slowly my books and other books similar to it are beginning to be translated in Europe, and apparently may become important in that respect. Now, the interesting thing about the relation between astrology and that consciousness movement, you see, is, as I said before, that here you have something which offers a potential new departure to a way of living, a way of culture, a type of consciousness, a conscious approach to life and to many things in life. And astrology can meet some of the very important needs of that movement, provided it becomes a different kind of astrology. And in an essential way, that is what even already since 1936 in the astrology of personality, I have tried to suggest, but even much more in the 60s, when I began to speak definitely of humanistic kind of astrology. Now, the whole type of astrology which tells the people what to do at this time or that time, how to find good days to buy a hat or take a trip or get married, what will happen in their life, tell them definitely this is what you are, this is what is going to happen to you, and all those very descriptive kind of analytical statement that the old type of astrologer were provided for their client, who expected the astrologer to provide that kind of information. That type of astrology, or the Hindu type, for instance, which also dealt entirely with event, with physical event, with definite things, when to do this, when to do that, who was you are going to get married to, how many children you should have or will have, when you are going to die, because the prediction of death was supposed to be essential for a Hindu astrologer, and that can be very drastic things. I have seen some awful cases happening in America with people who had been to either Hindu or students of Hindu astrologer had been told when they would die, when their wife was dying, and all those kind of things. Because that kind of astrology is what I call event-oriented. It takes for granted that astrology is like weather prediction or any other kind of cosmological or telluric prediction. This will happen this and then and at that time at that place and all that, and there is nothing you can do about it. You just want to know what is going to happen. If you are lucky and if you are clever, you might be able to circumvent the thing, move to another place, or if you have too much Mars, try to put emphasize Venus in you so that you can counteract the Martian things. and all that kind of things where you are completely outside of the chart, and the chart tell you what is going to happen in this body, in that physical thing, and somehow, mysteriously, you, independently from it, can look at it and say, oh, I better do something about that, or I better arrange my life in such and such a way. This is, of course, not the kind of astrology that can be of real value to somebody who is involved in that consciousness movement. Because, you see, as far as I can see, what you are dealing there is you are dealing with things which are external to you and which really don't concern the real you, the inner you, which is the thing, the consciousness you, which is the entity, the being who is all important for the people of the new generation of the consciousness movement of the counterculture, who have tried very hard, you see, to react against that very extroverted kind of American life where everything is based on outer success, outer doing this, social behavior, being liked by people, all the things which have to do with the external life, and that definitely ruled by pattern of behavior, by expectation, by doing it better than the next fellow, or having two cars when he has only one car, or whatever. All those kind of things dealing with purely external feature. What the consciousness movement has tried to do is to react against that by, in the contrary, putting stress on the inner things, on the introverted things, through meditation, that the cure-all of the consciousness movement, you must meditate, which means you must deal with your inner life and not so much with the outer life, and particularly the way that outer life is supposed to be ruled according to the Puritan or business kind of tradition of the last 100, particularly the last 100 years in America. So what happened, of course, is what the youth did there was to react very violently sometimes or against that those patterns of our Western society, and to break away from their family, to break away from their culture, through acid and other things, to break away from the rational molds of their intellect and their consciousness, trying to alter their consciousness, you know, and try to find an answer to that famous question which Ramana Maharshi in India asked of all his pupils to find an answer for, who am I? The question is, of course, that you have sometimes a difficult thing to deal when you are dealing with that simple question, who am I? Because there are other questions which are just as important and which are related to it in a way which I think the Hindus, subjectivistic and all involved in inner life and inner transformation as they were, fail to sometimes stress enough. And that other question is, what am I here for? Why am I born? And another question, where do I belong to? The trouble is that if you stress so much the intellect, the I consciousness, the individual consciousness, you find yourself in a kind of vacuum. You become not necessarily as alienated as in the beginning when you found yourself alienated from your parent and your culture and your business life and so on, but you are alienated in the sense that you have no roots left. You see, you have tried to cut yourself from your tradition and your past, and where are you? You have no root to float in the air and wafted by currents of air or storm sometimes, over which you have no control whatsoever. And you have to deal with it, and sometimes you deal with it in a very beatific way and saying, everything is perfect wherever I am wafted to, that's great. With the result is that you pass your life being buffeted here and there and belong nowhere. Yet you must realize that the I consciousness that you have now as a young man or young woman, whether it is at 20 or 30 or 40s or whatever it is essentially based on the culture you are born in, the things you arose from, your family, your tradition, your language. Language form your mind to a large extent. If you have different language, your thinking process are quite different to a large extent, you see. So the question is that you cannot take that I out of all context and develop it and try to find out what it's all about. Because you really, even what you find may be some extraordinary experience, but that experience has to be interpreted. When you come back to that ordinary kind of consciousness after your peak experience or your LSD cosmic experience and all that, you have to give it a form. You have to interpret it. You have to put it in words. And those words and that mind which will give a form to that experience, give a form not only to talk about it to somebody else, but for yourself to understand about it, is made by the mind of your culture and your group and so on. So that it is very important to try to find what you arose from, why you wanted to break away from it, so that you are not merely reacting emotionally against it, but that you are also trying to find out something on which you can build a new state of consciousness, a new state not only of consciousness, but as I will stress in a moment, of activity. A new type of will also, because will and activity are a very important factor, which unfortunately were practically left out of the consciousness movement and of the kind of psychology which more or less was responsible for it and flourished as a result of the need of the people involved in that so-called counterculture. One of the very important things what astrology did, I think, for people in that state is that if you are broken away from your family and your culture and everything, and you are there floating in midair, only to find out, and that is the very most popular type of astrology, that you are a Leo, so-called, and there are other people that you meet who are also Leo, and you have your moon in Aquarius, and you have some other people who have their moon in Aquarius, and so on. It gives you a sense that you belong to a category of people, that you have a kind of, to use a term which has been used a good deal during the consciousness movement, a family, which is not the old type of biological, traditional family with all the culture, the Puritanism, and the regulation of the past, but a family which is celestial, which is non-human, so that even if you want to stop the world, I want to get out, you know, of humanity, but you are still part of the celestial world. And there you have the world, the sky telling you, well, you see, you belong to that group there because you are born with the sun in Aries or in Taurus or in Gemini and so on. So already you have a little sense of stability, which is a stability which is not earth-bound, but it is a celestially bound kind of stability. And that, in a certain sense, I think, is one of the most important factors which has made astrology popular among the young people of that consciousness movement. because it gave them a certain frame of reference after they had practically discarded all frame of reference which they had been born into and made to believe was essential, you see. So this is, of course, a very important situation. But you have to realize that the trouble which has been so much in relation to many of the young generation is that deconditioning is one thing, but building again on a new set of conditions is an entirely different thing. And of course, reacting against discarding things, getting into mystical experience and all that is a process of deconditioning. But it is not a process of building. Even if you think that you have meditated yourself into reaching a mysterious I consciousness, and you cannot really speak about it because there is no word to describe it, no mind to really describe it. Even that is a kind of an escape to some extent from the world in which you have to return anyway every day in order to act and operate. So that you have to be able to build something. You have to build something which require some kind of basis, some kind of principle on which you can build, you see. And that is, of course, the kind of things which astrology can provide to a large extent, provided it is understood in relation to that need, which is entirely different from the need which astrology filled years ago when it was just telling the people what to expect the next day or the next year and how to believe, to behave in such and such manner and whether they had a strong Mars or a strong Venus temperament and all that. If the person has that strong Mars temperament, he knew it anyway to some extent. And it is very beautiful to say self-knowledge is the most important thing, but what do you do with it after you have it? Now, at that time in the 60s, there was also beginning in psychology what is became known as humanistic psychology. And it was also called the third force in psychology, the other two forces being Freudian psychoanalysis and also college psychology, you know, experiment with rat and mice and all nervous system psychology and all that kind of thing. Maslow was one of the great figures of that movement. Jung, to some extent, was a precursor of it, but it was mostly with Maslow and later on Assagioli, psychosynthesis and all that, that a kind of psychology was built up, which built on the positive aspect of the personality. What is the human potential and how to actualize it? The only trouble about that kind of movement, and we have all seen it occurring, it became very much transformed into what is also called as the human potential movement, which to a large extent could and did lead to very much of a narcissistic kind of approach, self-involvement, involvement in oneself. How to grow. I must grow. I must develop this consciousness, my potential. I must develop. I must express myself. And all those kind of things, which are perfectly all right up to a point, but very often turn into the great pitfall of a certain type of spiritual discipline, which is the hunger for psychic power, to develop powers of one kind or another. You justify it by saying, well, I'm just merely actualizing what is potential with me. But the question again is actualizing, fine, but what for? Do you actualize it only for yourself so that you can be a big and better human being, a very prosperous or very highly developed so that you can impress people with your experiences and so on? Or do you want to actualize your potential so that you can serve better and more fully fulfill your place in humanity as a whole, of which you are a part, whether you like it or not? You're born out of it, and actually it is the frame of reference to which you have to relate yourself eventually, but not humanity as it is now in terms of very set of fighting cultures, culture fighting against each other, nation fighting against each other, all sort of the ego principle in a collective sense. I have said often that our Western world, and particularly in America, was a society for the ego, by the ego, and and so on. And of course, that is exactly what the whole situation is. The thing that is striking, especially when you were born in Europe, as I was, I came to America in 1916, which is long ago. But as I always say to people, which amused them very much, that before I came to America, I never heard of anybody having psychological problems. And since that, you never hear of anything except psychological problems. You know, everything is completely personal, personalistic. You can't even refer to people by their family name. That would be too impersonal. You have to refer them with their first name, which is very confusing because you may find yourself in a room with five Peter and three Jack and things like that, and you never know which you are talking to. But in everything, in the relation between the parents and the children, it's all on a personal, on an emotional basis. In Europe, when I was born in France, you would never think, a child would never think of kissing his parents on the mouth, or being connected with the parents in the sense that the parent would use the child for their all psychological purpose against the husband or vice versa, or involve into the personal emotional struggle of the parent. You never knew when you were a child whether your parents were happy or unhappy. That was absolutely unknown territory. They were your parents, they were you, you develop yourself with your friends, with your school and all that. But it was not on a personal basis. It was anything in terms of basic principle, in terms of archetype of relationship. Now, this, of course, could lead to a very cold and impersonal kind of approach, and it did, obviously, in many cases. But in many cases also, it was a very healthy kind of relationship. And you can just as much find fault with a highly personalized kind of relationship, which of course is stressed, overstressed by TVs and all the emotional tantrums that you see in TV and the violence and all that, to which a child is subjected since he's 2 years old. Now, the question is, you see, that it is all right to deal with all those things in an astrological sense, and you can deal with the humanistic approach, which I more or less overstress and stress through all my books. But there is still a stage next to it, which is what I call the transpersonal approach. You see, the humanistic approach is trying to tell a person, now look, this is your life, you tell me what it is. If you want to know about astrology, why do you want to know about astrology? Well, the main reason to know about astrology is to be able to do that one thing which matters in life for a human being, is to actualize the, what you are potentially. In other words, the one moral law is actualize your potentiality. But there is something that is forgotten there. You actualize it not in a vacuum. You actualize it within a society, which also is composed of other individuals actualizing their potential and so on. Now, if you do it purely on a egocentric basis, and everybody does it on that, well, if you are nice people, and you are supposed to be nice people when you are in a consciousness movement, and you are supposed to love everybody and things like that, which is fine and very often happen. But nevertheless, it doesn't always happen. And it becomes sometimes either a vapid kind of love. You love everybody, and therefore you love nobody in particular, you know. And secondly, you are in a situation you find yourself is that you are very remote from everybody else. Everything is perfect, and it's their problem, it is their karma, and therefore that doesn't concern you. The only thing that concerns you is to actualize yourself. Well, the idea there, what you have in one of my book, Person-Centered Astrology, which I wrote when I was starting that movement, International Committee for Humanistic Astrology, which is now disbanded. When I started that, I had a chapter in my book, a sub-chapter, called Astrology as Karma Yoga. Because what I stressed there, you see, was that what the chart gave you was, on one hand, your karma, what you were born, what caused you to be born. I mean, taking for granted that you believe in some form of reincarnation, which are many kind of reincarnation, it's a very complex subject, not at all what everybody called popularly reincarnation, probably. But anyway, there are some kind of reincarnation, repetitive cycle, not repetitive, but I mean spiralic cycle, sometimes repetitive. And so that there is something which made you be born at that particular time, in that particular place, in that particular family. And the beautiful idea of very nice people of a spiritual nature saying, I choose those parents to be born, is absolutely poppycock. I mean, because there is only a few very rare cases, as far as I understand it, where there is a consciousness which is so developed above, beyond the physical and the body consciousness that you can say that it chose that particular family or particular thing. Karma shows it for you. It is the unfinished business of the past, the unactualized momentum of your past deeds or misdeeds, of your sins, and the sins of omissions are sometimes far worse than the sins of commission, because it is the things that you have not done which force you to do them again in a karmic sense, far more even than the thing that you have done wrong, because you may have learned from doing something wrong that it was wrong, and therefore, in a sense, you have neutralized it in some way. But the thing that you haven't done because you were too lazy or too afraid, you forget about it. And those things are the things that will haunt you the most if you or what X is born again, saying you in a new life, you see. So in that sense, the chart tells you why you were born at that particular place. That's your karma. But it is also something else. It is also what the Hindu call your dharma. And dharma is a very complex word, which means many things. It means truth. It is the truth of your being. It is the way that you are supposed to follow if you fulfill your destiny. If you fulfill that what you are born for. What you are born for is essentially your dharma. You are supposed to fulfill that. That is the reason why you are born. But you can only fulfill that for which you are born if you first fulfill the karma of the past, you see. So that every Hindu philosopher who meant anything at all said that there is no difference between karma and dharma. You can only fulfill your dharma by fulfilling your karma. You can only fulfill yourself by first taking care of all the unfinished business of the past.
This is the end of The Value of Astrology in the Consciousness Movement, Part 1, by Dane Rudyar. The preceding audio is copyrighted by Leila Rudyar Hill and was brought to you by Rita, the Rudyar Institute for Transpersonal Activity. Learn more about Rita or contribute to the ongoing legacy of Dane Rudyar at www.rudyarinstitute.org. For the complete selection of free downloads of audio presentations by Dane Rudyar, visit www.rudyaraudioarchives.com.